Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
My father was the world's first black champion of anything.
That's Sydney Taylor Brown in an archival clip from NBC in 2007, 2 years after her death. She was talking about her father, the cyclist Major Taylor. Marshall Walter Major Taylor, who lived most of his life in Worcester, was crowned the fastest man in the world in 1899. He was also one of the most acclaimed athletes in the United States, all of which he accomplished at the height of the Jim Crow era, and nearly 50 years before Jackie Robinson first stepped onto the baseball field of the all-white Brooklyn Dodgers. Major Taylor's story is chronicled in a new book out from Michael Cranish, The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. And joining me now is Michael Cranish. He's also a reporter for The Washington Post and a former correspondent for The Boston Globe and my former colleague. Michael, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I know you first came across Major Taylor's story almost a couple of decades ago when you were writing for the Boston Globe magazine. I can remember the picture, right? He was on the cover of that magazine, I think, in 2001. So
what
first turned you on to the story and then made you want to develop it into a whole book?
Well, I heard about the story at some point about Major Taylor, and I was just so interested. Basically, the elevator pitch was, how did this man at the height of the Jim Crow era become the world champion? He was an African-American at a time when we basically had apartheid in this country. He overcame all that to be a national and world champion. And I just thought there was an awful lot of information there that helped us understand our country at a very difficult moment through this unique lens of this one man who basically paved the way for Jackie Robinson and other black athletes who later became champions.
So tell us a little bit more about him. And how did he get into cycling in the first place? This was basically an all-white sport at the time.
So Major Taylor grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. He faced a lot of racism there. For example, he wasn't allowed even to go to the YMCA. He had a mentor named Bertie Munger, who owned a bicycle manufacturing company there, believed him so strongly that he would be a great cyclist that he decided to move his company and take Major Taylor with him to Worcester, Massachusetts. And so when they arrived in Worcester, Major Taylor was taken to the Y in Worcester, and the YMCA there said, you're welcome to train here. And that's what he did. He was a 5'7" in the 140s. He wasn't a big man, but he used incredible training methods and nutrition to be able to compete with people who were much bigger and seemingly stronger with him. But he was a very disciplined person and became a champion.
And this is before the era of the automobile, of course. So the bicycle was actually kind of a new innovation. And it's kind of hard to imagine now, Michael, but it was a super popular sport at the time, right? I mean, can you give us some of that context and how Massachusetts was really one of the hubs for bicycle manufacturing at the
time? Absolutely. No pun intended, but it was the hub in many ways. So this was a world, if you think of the 1890s, there's only a handful of automobiles in the country. Most of them are made by bicycle manufacturers. But the bicycle was speed. This was the era of the horse and buggy. So when Major Taylor raced, for example, in New York City in 1896, there was no subway. They had very few automobiles. The bicycle was the future. It was modern. You could go faster than most people had ever gone before, other than in a train. But as far as under your own power, it was, you know, the future. There were tens of thousands of horses throughout New York City, so many that the city residents had a joke about the city was paved with carpets of crap. So when the bicycle came along and you could cleanly go on your own power for 15 miles an hour or even faster to get from your home to your work, that overtook the city. It was the center of the bicycle craze. Massachusetts was the great center of bicycle manufacturing. So it helped this region hum for quite a long time.
So you mentioned 1896, such a significant year in American history and in your book, right? This is the year of Plessy versus Ferguson,
right,
codifying separate but equal. And it's also the year that is sort of the coming out party for Major Taylor here. And I'd like you to read some of your book, if you would, Michael. And we'll just sort of set this up a little bit. This is the race that really kind of propels him into the national spotlight. It's this grueling 6-day race, if you can even think of that, at Madison Square Garden, which requires athletes to just ride as much as you possibly can for 6 straight days. Could you pick it up there as he arrives with his mentor, who you described, Bertie Munger, a moment ago?
So he had just finished a half-mile race where he had beaten the greatest sprinter in the world, Eddie Bald. So suddenly this 18-year-old black man who was allowed to compete against whites had, in fact, triumphed over Eddie Bald. And now there's a 6-day race. Bald doesn't want to race the 6-day race. He's got the starter's pistol. And that sets up this particular part of the book. So I'll read from it. Finally, it was Taylor's turn. The crowd anticipated his arrival, bursting into applause, quote, greater than any that had had before. The band struck up Swanee River with its lyrics about, quote, longing for the old plantation, unquote, and, quote, oh, darkies, how my heart grows weary, unquote. But Taylor paid no attention as he took his warm-ups around the track. Eddie Bald held the pistol in the air. Quote, are the timers ready, unquote, he asked, and received confirmation. Bald fired the pistol, and the racers began slowly jockeying for position. Taylor rode 18 hours on the first day, becoming so exhausted that Munger agreed to find a doctor. It was a ruse to keep Taylor riding. There was no doctor coming. Taylor hoped to sleep for at least an hour, but Munger woke him after 15 minutes. Even that was too much. Taylor's trainers told him he had slept 15 minutes over his schedule.
It's just unbelievable. There's so much to unpack there, Michael, but can we just begin with the basics of this, the significance of this event in Major Taylor's life? Because he won a lot of races, and this wasn't one of them. He finished eighth in this six-day race, and yet it was one of the defining moments of his career.
That's right. So he'd won the sprint against Bald. This time, six-day race, this was inhumane. Later, when Theodore Roosevelt became governor of New York, he banned these kind of races. It was so inhumane. It was said that it took years off your life to do this kind of contest. But many riders did not finish. So for this young man, Major Taylor, to finish this race in itself was a triumph. You weren't expected to do this as an entry coming in. Not only was this a race in which Taylor did so well, the point for Taylor was he was disproving the racist theories of the time. As you mentioned, 6 months earlier, in the case of Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court had said separate but equal is okay. Taylor, here he was, going against all the white competitors who were the best racers in the world, and he was given a fair footing, and he did very, very well. He went on to win many, many races. So for him, he carried a lot on his shoulders, put a lot of pressure on himself because he knew he wasn't racing just for his own glory, but to show the world that given a fair chance, given true equality, that they could triumph.
But he's doing all this in an incredibly hostile environment. And I love the detail you have in there about the music that the band is playing at Madison Square Garden. You've got another scene where they strike up Dixie, right? The sort of informal anthem of the Confederacy. I mean, so they're trying to get in his head there. What kind of racism did he encounter as he tried to go to these events?
Well, in many cases, he was not allowed to race. He had many death threats against him. He repeatedly said he was going to retire because he was tired of all the death threats. So it was an extremely difficult situation for him. There was a race in Taunton, Massachusetts, where another rider came over to him, choked him to insensibility. He lay on the track for 5 minutes. His manager, Bertie Munger, thought he had died. Others in the crowd thought so, too. He eventually revived. But the racism was so bad that Bertie Munger, at one point, took out some lotion that was supposed to lighten your skin, make you look white. And Taylor was so desperate at this moment that he agreed to allow Bertie Munger to put this lotion on him. And for several days they did this. It was incredibly painful. It lightened the skin maybe a tiny bit, Munger said later, but it was not effective. And after that experience, Taylor said, no, I do not want to do that. My race is my motivation. He was very proud of being a Black American. So never again did he agree to have lotion applied to him in that way.
So how should we think about Bertie Munger? I mean, he seems like a complicated character in this book, Michael. I mean, I think the analog that might jump to sports fans' mind is Branch Rickey, right, who was the advocate for bringing Jackie Robinson in to play for the Dodgers. In some ways, Bertie Munger is the advocate for Major Taylor, and yet we see him sort of, you know, lying to him about how much sleep he's going to get or having a doctor coming when there isn't one, putting him through this painful skin bleaching procedure. What do we make of him?
He obviously loved Major Taylor, believed in him very strongly. He was ridiculed by many other whites for taking Major Taylor under his wing. But he was a tough manager. I mean, Major Taylor once said that Bertie Munger scared me to death many times, including once when he applied lotion. So it wasn't just the lotion. He must have been a very, very tough trainer, but his methods obviously were very effective. This was a time in which there weren't that many whites who were willing to take a Black under their wing. Taylor did this on his own, to be clear. This isn't a story of a white savior, but Taylor, when he wrote his autobiography, dedicated it to Bertie Munger. He said, this is the man who swore that I would be the fastest bicycle rider in the world, and he made that prophecy come true.
So I think, understandably, Major Taylor got pretty sick of what he was encountering at a lot of these U.S. stops and eventually takes his talents overseas. How is he received abroad?
Well, first he goes to Canada in 1899 to compete in the World Championship, and he won the World Championship. So this was an amazing moment. When the national anthem played, he said, I never felt more American than when the national anthem was played for me in Canada. It's one of the most striking quotes of all the things I read about him that I came across. Then he went to Europe after that. He was enticed. There was a promoter from France who said, there's only one racer in America I want to race in France against the best, and that is Major Taylor. And Taylor came to France, and he competed against the very best racer there, Edmond Jacquelin. He lost the first race, but came back in a rematch and won. And there was no doubt at that moment that he truly was the world's fastest man.
And as he racked up these wins, he did rack up considerable career earnings. He eventually retired, so he had a comeback, but he raced for the last time for real in 1910. But despite all that success, Michael, he eventually is forced to sell his house, his family's property in Worcester to pay off debt. What happened in the later years of Major Taylor's life?
Well, he did have, after he came back from one of his trips, he said, "I had a near nervous breakdown," but it was bad enough that he didn't race for 3 years, did have a comeback. He started investing in a business, in the auto business. He wanted to build a new kind of tire that was steel belted. He was ahead of his time. His family believes, and I remember his daughter told me all those years ago, that she thought he was cheated out of his money by white business people who wanted his product. He gave a lot of money away to relatives. He gave money to his church. And gradually he lost most of his wealth. So he had been one of the wealthiest men in Massachusetts. He had his own home in Worcester. But in the end, that all went downhill. He did not want to be remembered for the sad part of his life. He decided in the 1920s to write his autobiography. He thought it was very important. He saw racism again rising even more. The Birth of the Nation movie had come across, and he saw it was going around him. One of the sort of astonishing things in the book that I discovered and didn't know originally when I did the magazine story was that the Ku Klux Klan had the largest rally in New England history in Worcester in the mid-1920s. 15,000 people gathered just a few miles from Major Taylor's home while he's writing his autobiography about what he accomplished. Wow. So you can only imagine what's going through his mind. He had fought so hard for his race to show what blacks could do, and then all these years later, racism was even more worse than ever, perhaps, with the rise of the KKK. So that must have been a very difficult thing for him to experience. But the point is, he wanted his story to be remembered and to show that with enough perseverance that you could triumph against the highest odds.
I imagine that his story will be remembered a little bit more because of your book. Michael Cranish, he's the reporter and author for The Washington Post, former Globe correspondent. The new book is called The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
And Michael Cranish will be at the Porter Square Books tonight and at the Boston Public Library tomorrow. More information about those events is on our website, radioboston.org.